go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's past the hour, and it is Friday on the front porch on the horn for this, the 17th day of February, 2017. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the Madcap Merry Zany Multimedia Extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours during which this program is live every evening from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you do that, if you pick out the screen name, the password, if you jump right in there, you'll be met by Anatole, Don from Central PA, Jug of Punch, Jules, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. And I'm not sure what it's like. Apparently, it's stormy weather in Northern California, but here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Trump Virginia stand. Oh, what a beautiful day. I mean, except for the Trump part. I mean, drop dead freaking gorgeous. We got up into the 70s, not a cloud in the sky, and if it gets much more beyond the 76 degrees that it is here in the south facing fabulous Horn studio, I'll have to turn on the AC. You know, in February, I did mention February. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, yeah. And it is Friday on the front porch. I'm sorry, it's not just raining in Northern California where longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky is. It is fucking pouring. Oh, that's not good. I mean, not good at least where things like the Oroville Dam are concerned. And I saw a photo of gray and rainy Los Angeles earlier today as well. So, yeah. But, you know, that's okay, because there's no such thing as climate change, and we've got a brand new EPA administrator. Yes, Lord, yes, we do. Noted climate science denier, Scott Pruitt, who is not a climatologist, not a scientist, but rather a hacking and flacking, lawyering kind of guy from out in the earthquake-prone reaches of Oklahoma-stan, Trump-lahoma, Trump-clahoma. Kind of hard to work that P-K consonantal whatever it is. Not a diphthong, is it? But, yeah. And I want to say thank you to everyone who has gotten us to this part, this day. We got over the hump, the holes filled in. All we need to do is raise $200 this evening, and we are there. Yeah, the topic just got changed in the chat room to EPA RIP. MONEY. Mm-hmm. No. The Scott Pruitt became the, not for want of trying, once again, the Democrats trying to do their job, because see, there was a whole trove of missing emails. Well, emails only matter if they have something to do with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, Jesus Christ. Oh my God. I can't believe it. She's the devil.
Benghazi, oh God, Hillary, God. Oh, Goldman Sachs speeches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there were oodles and oodles and oodles of emails that were only due to be delivered today by virtue of court action out in Trumplahoma. But the Republican majority said, emails, who gives a shit about a bunch of emails? Come on, he's a great guy. Let's make him EPA administrator already. Sorry for the extended silence, but it was good news because that means I'm sneezing again. You know, for about a week and a half, it hurt so bad I couldn't muster up the necessary musculature without to have. It was refreshing, I admit. And I don't know, as warm as it's getting, maybe something's blooming out there. But we do. We have a brand spanking new EPA administrator who has no intention whatsoever of, you know, doing that protecting part, as in Environmental Protection Agency. No, not in the least. No, thank you. No. Mm-mm. And, hey, just because I feel like it's kind of my job, who's the vote breakdown on Scott Pruitt was 52-aye, 46-nay. Susan Collins of the Republican Party actually went over and voted against Scott Pruitt. She said he was everything Maine didn't need in the way of an EPA administrator. So how did they get 52 votes? Oh, look over there. It's Bunny and Claude. You know, Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin, alleged Democrats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those two. They voted with the Republicans because, well, they're a lot more Republican than they are Democrat. And once again, I'll say, just for the record, that going forward, say like 2018, if a miracle were to occur, and I mean a miracle, and the Democrats had the majority, no majority that has Joe Manchin in it is really a majority. Because Joe Manchin is a shank artist. Every time the Democrats wanted to get something done, Joe Manchin would be there doing the bidding of Mitch McConnell and stopping whatever it was that needed doing. Yep, Bunny and Claude strike again. Brother. Meanwhile, Comrade Kumquat took off for South Carolina today, and then tomorrow he's holding a campaign rally. Mm-hmm. Yes, for Trump 2020. There at the airport in, what is it, Tampa, Melbourne, Florida? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing, I guess. And one last thing about what happened yesterday in the White House. No. Not the entirely psychotic and terrifying press conference. No, that's had enough said about it, probably to last us all a lifetime. But the little bit of political kabuki that took place later, when the Tangerine Toddler. There's a new one, courtesy of Don from Central PA in the chat room. When the Tangerine Toddler had a big set to in the White House to celebrate getting rid of the stream protection rule. Standing behind him, back behind all the dignitaries, you know, the Joe Manchins and the Rob Bishops and the Evan Jenkinses and the Shelley Moore Capitos and the Mitch McConnells and what have you, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who once said, "Well, I don't think the people of Kentucky are ever going to miss a few hilltops here and there." There were arrayed a bunch of America's heroic coal miners. You know how you knew they were America's heroic coal miners? Because they were still dressed up in their coal mining get-ups. Everybody else was in a suit. But the coal miners were not allowed that dignity. And I just want to reinforce the fact that in a previous era, in a foregone age, bygone age, not foregone, bygone. In a bygone age, my grandfather and my father would no sooner have come home wearing work clothes than they would have flown to the moon in the mither. They also didn't wear hats in houses. It's how it was. But there stood those hard-working, heroic coal miners in their coal mining duds, wearing hard hats inside the White House. And every time I saw a photograph of it, or every time I saw footage of it, I got a little more disgusted. Because, you see, the struggle in which my grandfather engaged was a struggle for essential human dignity, which those clowns yesterday spat upon and gave up. There was a time when the people who had struggled for human dignity in the coal industry felt like one of the rights that they had earned was the right to wear decent clothing. And so had men of my grandfather's generation, or my father's, been invited to the White House, they would have no sooner worn work clothes to the White House than they would have worn them to church. And in fact, when Sunday rolled around, Granddad was there. He was a rough-hewn Christian, I guess you might say. But he was there in suit and tie. Not some filthy-ass work pants and a dirty-ass work shirt and a hard hat. Although, for all I know now in the churches of West Virginia, if you show up in your filthy-ass work clothes covered in coal dust wearing a hard hat, they applaud you for being one of our heroic workers against the war on coal. Yeah, I did notice that. They were clean coveralls, Ron. Says, did you notice that they were clean coveralls instead of the ones that have actually been used? Those suckers could have performed surgery without changing clothes. Yeah, I did notice that, Ron, but they were still work duds. Hell, in the case of my grandfather, and I know in the case of my father, even coming home from the furnace, when it was time to bring his work clothes home, they came home in a brown paper grocery sack where Mama would then wash them and he'd go back with clean clothes. Yeah. but not these clowns. Because, see, had they shown up dressed like human beings, dressed like anybody else in the world would dress if they were going to the White House, well, no one would have known that they were our hard-working miners in the war on coal. In other words, they were stage props. They were things, not people. And they were there to be seen and not heard. They were there to be, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, exploited. See how it works? Sure. My grandfather would not have walked across his wife's threshold wearing filthy-ass work clothes. It was a matter of respect. O tempores, o mores, I suppose, don't you? Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to sort of get that out of the way at the top of the program, lest people think, well, yeah, but now in so-called modern coal culture, it's hip to wear your filthy coal mining duds everywhere you go. That way people know that you're what West Virginia is all about. Goddamn dummies. On the other side of the coin, however, a little something else. And that's this. I haven't shared the complete list, and it seemed that this would be an appropriate time. As you know, the reason I was gone 2 weeks ago was because I was off in D.C. working on the reintroduction of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It is now H.R. 786 in the 115th Congress. If you want to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor it, that's how you refer to it, H.R. 786. And just by way of eliminating unnecessary work, unless you're a constituent and you want to send them a note thanking them, and that is perfectly appropriate. A quick reminder, the original sponsor is Representative John Yarmuth of Kentucky's 3rd Congressional District. He's out of Louisville. Representative Louise Slaughter of New York's 25th is at the top of the list. She's the daughter of a coal mine blacksmith in Harlan County, Kentucky. She knows. Gerald E. Connolly of Virginia's 11th District is on the bill. Diana DeJet of Colorado's 1st District is on the bill. Out of Minnesota's 4th District, Betty McCollum is on. Paul Tonko out of New York's 20th. Matt Cartwright out of Pennsylvania's 17th. Jan Schakowsky out of Illinois. Eleanor Holmes Norton out of D.C., the at-large representative. No vote. Donald S. Beyer of the 8th of Virginia. And truly a progressive hero in the House, Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona. Pete DeFazio of Oregon. Barbara Lee of California. Adam Schiff of California, the 28th District. Earl Blumenauer of Oregon's 3rd District. From the California 9th District, Jerry McInerney. From California's 19th, Zoe Lofgren. From the 3rd District of Connecticut, Rosa DeLauro. Carol Shea Porter of New Hampshire's 1st District. John Conyers of Michigan, Alcee Hastings of Florida, Nikki Tsongas of Massachusetts, Jared Polis of Colorado, and Elizabeth Esty of Connecticut are all on the bill. It launched with an impressive array of representatives, 23 in all. So, kudos to them. And if you did not hear me call your representative's name, especially if your representative is a Democrat, reach out to them. If your representative is a Republican, reach out to them too, please. Because there are about a dozen Republicans who are worth that effort. And in particular, if I can find the tab here, I can tell you with some precision who they are. Here, let me just... Because there is an organization out there within the Congress called the Climate Solutions Caucus. And it has an equal number of Republicans and Democrats. And they... among other things, acknowledge the reality of climate change. Let me see. Where's the... Are you in Utah? Mia Love is a Republican on the Climate Solutions Caucus. Brian Fitzpatrick is on the Climate Solutions Caucus. And Elise Stefanik. Fitzpatrick is from Pennsylvania. And Stefanik is from New York. If they happen to be your representative, perhaps reach out to them very nicely and say, hey, why don't you sign the AIC Act? In Florida, you can reach out to Representative Carlos Curbelo and he's a Republican member of the Climate Solutions Caucus. It is entirely possible that they are immune to pressure from the coal industry. Oh, by the way, in that photograph of Donald Trump signing away the clean air and clean water of Appalachia, there is one miner in a suit, but he still managed to wear his hard hat, and he has another accessory, an oxygen line, because he can no longer breathe properly. And he's there to celebrate the fact that many other people in Appalachia, thanks to the coal industry, won't be able to breathe properly, including little children. Jesus. Stunning, you know? Yeah. So I thought it might be worthwhile in light of the fact that that assault has been made on clean air and clean water. To mention the AIC Act. Because the nice thing about the AIC Act is if it were ever to be passed, we wouldn't even need the stream protection rule because mountaintop removal would be done. Yeah? Yeah. Other things that are floating around out there today? Well, there's no shortage. Oh, the full list of Climate Solutions caucus members. Neither of the two co-chairs, Carlos Curbelo or Ted Deutsch, Democrat of Florida, Curbelo, Republican, Florida's 26th, neither of them are on the AIC Act. Alan Lowenthal of California's 47th, a Democrat, isn't on yet. Another Republican, Representative Ileana Ross-Lehtinen. Republican Ryan Costello of Pennsylvania. Representative Brendan Boyle, Democrat of Pennsylvania. Representative John Delaney, Democrat of Maryland. Representative Patrick Meehan, Republican of Pennsylvania. They're not on it yet. Representative Lee Zeldin, Republican of New York, not on it. Representative Seth Moulton, Democrat of Massachusetts, not on it. Representative Scott Peters, Democrat of California. Representative Mark Amadei, Republican of Nevada, not on it. As mentioned, Representative Mia Love, Republican of Utah, not on it. Representative Suzanne Bonamici, Democrat of Oregon, not on it. Representative Brian Fitzpatrick, Republican of Pennsylvania, not on it. Representative Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont, not on it. Representative Elise Stefanik, Republican of New York, not on it. Representative Jim Himes, Democrat of Connecticut, not on it. Representative Don Bayer, Democrat of Virginia, not on it. Representative Brian Mast, Republican of Florida, not on it. Representative Dave Weichert, Republican of Washington, not on it. Representative Earl Blumenauer, Democrat of Oregon, on it. Representative Charlie Crist, alleged Democrat of Florida, not on it. Representative Don Bacon, Republican of Nebraska, not on it. So there's plenty of room there if you happen to be a constituent of any of those House members. Please reach out to them. Oh, did I mention it's, I didn't. Well, I kind of did. It's Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. And so here in about a half an hour, Sparky will light up the bob signal and throw out the breadcrumb trail. And we will have, of course, the conversation that takes place every Friday evening, only hasn't for the last two because of my absence. One of the most unique things that happens in progressive radio, a round table comprised of workaday, everyday folks. That's why we call it the Extraordinary Ordinary Round Table. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, you are heartily welcome so to do. And that all you have to do is get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype, and tell him you want to be part of Friday on the Front Porch. And he will he'll show you how to get in. If you absolutely cannot use Skype, if Skype plumb evades you, just like the Boogaloo, then we do maintain the stress line, and you can get into the conversation that way. And you are more than and mightily Welcome. So, what all's out there? Well, here's one of those sweet little warm and fuzzy stories. You know how cuddly bear cubs look, right? I mean, because they are. They're cute and they're curious and they waddle along. And you never go near them because mama is nearby and she will rip your guts out. But they're awfully cute to look at, bear cubs. Well, yesterday, while we were all sort of busy having the dribbling horrors over that globally televised meltdown, otherwise known as a news conference, the House of Representatives was, you know, working. And one of the things that they were at work on, because, well, you know, I mean, you know, goddamn, they're Republicans, is a law that would allow people to go out and slaughter bear cubs in their dens with their mamas in the national wildlife refuges, of which there are no small number in Alaska. Wildlife and conservation groups are disgusted with what HJ Res 69 would do. It encompasses activities on some 76 million acres of national wildlife refuges. This is the NRA at work, if you can believe it. And you should, because it's true. The Obama administration had promulgated something called the Fair Chase Rule in regard to bar hunting. Daniel Boone killed a bar on this tree, 1783. I don't know if it's 83, 93, whatever. And the Fair Chase Rule said, look, if you're going to bear hunt, at least have some skin in the game. And so under the Fair Chase Rule, there were limitations on, you know, vicious leg traps, bear baiting, and the shooting of bears and wolves from airplanes, otherwise known as Palin style. Well, the House of Representatives says that's all over now. No. And if the thing goes forward and the rule is overturned and there's no reason to think that the Senate won't join right in, sheesh, then it will literally be okay for hunters to go right to the den and shoot little baby bears alongside their mamas, you know, bear cubs, right by their mamas as they sleep. No, really, killed in their sleep. I mean, man, that is some sporting good times. Hell, the defenders of wildlife didn't want the rule. The Safari Club International, on the other hand, they and the NRA wanted the Fair Chase Rule overturned. Because jackbooted Fish and Wildlife Service boots on their necks right next to the tattoo that says, "Only God can judge me, God bless America." The Fair Chase Rule had limited the use of rotting meat and pet food to lure bears in for an easy kill. Yeah. One hunter back in 2014, when something similar was being considered in Maine, said, "Hounding, baiting, and trapping lack the very skill that draws most hunters to the sport, the challenge of tracking and finding the bear. These practices give hunting a bad image by mocking the notion of sportsmanship and fair chase." Now, it kind of blows my mind that, you know, yesterday Trump said, three times he said it, "I inherited a mess. I inherited a mess. The country was in a mess." It was, of course, a complete and total fabrication. It was a lie, because lying is what Donald Trump does best. I mean, if you ask him what his name is, it's a miracle he says Donald Trump instead of just lying. By 2-1, Alaskans didn't even support bear baiting or bear trapping in national wildlife refuges. But hell, the Republicans found time in their busy day to do it anyway. The same resolution has been introduced in the Senate under the sponsorship of the two senators from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan. It hasn't come up for a vote yet. It will, though. It will. Because nothing says manly sporting pursuit like sneaking up to a den and shooting a mama bear and her cubs as they sleep. God damn these people. Mercy. So we've got that. Just a quick radar reset. Here at the Horn, we try to be out front of issues that we know that are probably going to become hot buttons. I've got a name for you to remember. Baronelle Stutzman. Baronelle Stutzman. Yes, Baronelle is a woman. And she's not just any woman. She's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical woman. And she's a florist. All I had to say was florist, and you knew where this story was going, didn't you? Out in Washington State. And she didn't want to sell no flyers to no Homer sectionals what was going to have a Homer sectional abomination wedding. No, really. It was back in 2013 when Robert Ingersoll and Kurt Fried went to her to try to give her money in exchange for her providing flowers for their wedding. And she said, "Praise Jesus, no, for you are an abomination. And if I was to sell you flowers, that would mean that I endorsed your abominating homosexual ways." Mm-hmm. Well, that got her sued. Persecuted in the name of Christ for her religion, that's the way, right. And she was fined $1,000 for violating the civil rights of Robert Ingersoll and Kurt Fried. Along the way, she got deposed and she said, "No, it wouldn't be right for me, it wouldn't be okay for me to refuse to sell to a couple made up of a black man and a white woman or a white man and a black woman. That wouldn't be okay. It wouldn't be okay if I refused to do business with a black couple or a pair of atheists celebrating Atheisting Day. No, that wouldn't be right. But my religion says I can't sell flyers to no homosexuals." But I didn't refuse because of their, it wasn't because of their sexual orientation. It was because of my religion. Well, Washington has a non-discrimination law. And she shat all over it in the name of Jesus. So it went up on appeal. And she got slapped down again. She's being defended by an anti-LGBT hate group called the Alliance Defending Freedom. Where's the sons of bitches from Liberty Lobby? Slacking? Mm-hmm. And so the Alliance Defending Freedom, you know, the freedom to be a bigot, the freedom to discriminate, the freedom to violate the laws that apply to everybody else but not Christians. Well, they're fundraising for all they're worth. And they're thinking about taking it up to the Supreme Court. Yeah. So just keep it when you hear that name in a news story somewhere along the way, when you hear Baronelle Stutzman, and you go, wait a minute, where have I heard that? Oh, Bob. Yeah. That's the goofy lady whose religion is all tied up in flowers. Right. That Baronelle Stutzman. Mm-hmm. 17 minutes before the hour, and yes, just I didn't go through all the hoopla and everything, but we've got $200 to raise this evening. And the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. If you want to help out and become a subscriber, you're mighty welcome to do that. Sure do appreciate it. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay? Oh, you know how Steve was telling us last night that little Cletus curls up by the speaker when she's listening to the program? We now have photographic proof. And it's just cute as can be. Snuggled up right next to the speaker there. Hello, Cletus. Cletus is such a good little baby. Oh, what a puppy. It's just that's just heartwarming. Thanks, Steve. What else? Because Friday on the front porch can be kind of a scattershot affair. This, and I'm not trying to make it all Wednesday-ish, but some of this stuff you just can't leave it alone. It's hanging up there above the rim, and if you don't just slam it home and let it bounce harmlessly away, there's something wrong. I'm talking, of course, about the one, the only. Ken Ham, proprietor in general of Answers in Genesis, the Creationism theme park, Creation Museum, I'm sorry, and the Ark Encounter theme park. I generally am of the opinion that there's no such thing as bad art. I mean, there's art that's poorly executed, but art I generally get behind. It's one of those things that establishes our humanity. But damn. I mean, really. Honestly. There's something new to see at the Ark Encounter. This is a little bit difficult. It hurts my brains. Because I'm somewhat modestly schooled in the history and prehistory and archaeological and fossil record of humanity. Stone tools are one of those things that the archaeologists look for as an indicator of humanity and cultural advancement in Stone Age. That's why it's called that, cultures. It was a couple of years ago, in May, that archaeologists ran across what they think are the oldest stone tools known to mankind, some 3.3 million years old, 700,000 years older than anyone had thought before. And as you come down the ages and the epochs and the eons and whatever, they differentiate into brilliantly technical manifestations of knowledge building. Scrapers and knives and axes. One of the most fascinating of the stone tools is the Aeschylean hand axe. You can date cultures themselves by the kind of stone tools you find lying about. The Clovis Point is one of those seminal moments in tool development. But there are some things you just can't do with a stone tool. A lot of things you can. The pyramids of Mesoamerica, every last one of them was made using stone tools. Fascinating to contemplate. But there's some new art down at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky. And considering that it only cost the taxpayers of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan, $18 million. Well, hell, bargain! If you should ever happen to know a person or who goes to work at the Ark Encounter, know that they will, if they're unmarried, they'll have to sign a vow of chastity. Uh-huh. Of course, you probably won't know anybody who goes to work there because the Commonwealth of Kentucky gave its approval to the Ark Encounter folks and Answers in Genesis to discriminate in employment practices. You cannot work at the Ark Encounter if you are not a Christian. Yeah, I know, I know. A little bit of irony there, isn't there? The Old Testament, from which comes the Noah story, doesn't even belong to the Christians. That's a Jewish thing. Children of Israel and all that. But, sorry, if you're Jewish, even though it's your book, you ain't getting no job at no Ark Encounter in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand, because you got to be a Christian to work there. And now, for the suckers, I mean patrons, of the Ark Encounter, there's something new and wonderful to behold when you go there, because they've got a brand new diorama. Or they're going to have. Ken Ham, the Australian huckster, whom for some reason or another we cannot convince the people of Australia to tell to come home, is all excited about his new World Before the Flood exhibit. It's going to be, okay, there's about a 64 million year gap between humanity and dinosaurs. It's undisputed, all right? As in, no question about it. I mean, it's just really, I mean, it, no question about it. But this diorama at the Ark Encounter will feature you might want to get the hockey puck. Not saying, just saying. It will feature a display showing humans and giants fighting dinosaurs in a big arena like the Flavian Amphitheater, otherwise known as the Colosseum of ancient Rome. No, really. If you want to go over to Twitter and look up the timeline of AIG Ken Ham, H-A-M, stands for Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham. Exquisite design by at Ark Encounter artists for new diorama depicting wicked population in the pre-flood world to be installed at Ark Encounter. 18 million dollars. I mean, if the Commonwealth of Kentucky wanted to do something with 18 million dollars, and do it to make God happy, why not feed some poor people for a long time with $18 million? Or at least one really top-notch meal. The wicked population in the pre-flood world. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of women crawling around on the ground. There's a giant getting ready to gig one of the women folk. There's a couple of little cross between Gollum and an Ewok critters. there are painted and shaped metal shields that appear to be metal shields hung on the walls. There appears to be a glass ceiling. Oh, Lord, how I wish I was kidding. There are wicked pre-flood people. Throughout the galleries with their arms in the air. Put your arms in the air, Yzma. Hooting and a hollering. And in the midst of it all, entering from the stage right doorway, a Tyrannosaur. Yeah, of course. 18 million dollars. $18 million and not a single goddamn slee stack. No offense, but if we're just going to make shit up, I want slee stacks. Jesus, Mary and Joseph on a triune tricycle. What an awesome business to be in. The Ark Encounter. I know. So, just some stuff to talk about, and whatever you've got on your mind to talk about, as we move into the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary roundtable portion of the conversation. We'll take a break and come back again. If you've never tried it before, just fire up your Skype and send a message with FOTFP or Friday or something like that in it to Sparky Dunk on Skype, and you'll be into the thick of things before you even know it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. It is. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
It was a night like this 40 million years ago. I lit a cigarette.
gets kind of infectious, doesn't it? Boom, boom, akalaka, boom, boom. Yeah. I had this vision of Ken Ham sitting around one day and hearing that song and going, wait a minute, oh, I can make a fast back on that, on, don't you know, crikey. Brother Deacon Asa asking the question. You figure Apricot Anus will send his ice brown shirts to grab Amish Wolverine Ken Ham and send him back to Oz? He is an immigrant, after all, and he's stealing jobs from the real Americans, isn't he? Absolutely. Somewhere out there, there's a starving evangelical huckster who would very well like to have that Ark Encounter gig. Ken Ham needs to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Friday on the front porch, and Sparky has the gang assembled. Let's check in. Are you in out of the rain, Sparky?
Yeah, I was just out in it a while ago. I had to go out and sweep some water off out the north door that's weeping in there. It's no wind blowing or nothing. It's just been coming down all day.
Sounds fun. So what was this? What is this about a pig story?
Well, the other day I come home, my neighbors are building this pen or enclosure out in the back area that I can see from my front porch. And I said, what the hell are they going to get? So the other day that I was outside and the gal that lives over there, she's out. And I asked her, I said, what the hell are you building over there? And she goes, a pig pen. And I said, no. She said, yes. And then I come to look over there yesterday, and they got two pigs, not just one.
Well, of course, how do you expect to have three pigs if you don't start with two?
The two little pigs right now.
They'll grow up, and they'll figure it out by themselves.
Yeah, but they're gonna tear that little enclosure up.
Oh, yeah, and here in fairly short order, if you're downwind, it's going to smell real purty.
Well, there's a neighbor closer to it than me. I mean, they got a big hedge dividing their yard plus fence, but they're right up against it.
I mean, pigs don't like to be nasty animals. They don't want to be nasty animals. And it doesn't have to be that way, but if you put them in an enclosure, fragrant.
Yeah, I just wonder if the son, he's a good kid. He's 11 years old. He's raising them for 4-H project.
Ah, okay. So they won't be there too much longer. Somebody will buy them and there'll be...
Well, the fair isn't until next year. That's when they usually sell them all. You know, have the auction.
Right.
And, shoot, my step-grandkid had one years ago. It was like 300 pounds when he sold it. Used to have to go walking with it, too. You know, I had his pig whip.
Oh, but of course, absolutely. You can't have a pig without a pig whip.
And they make some fancy pig whips. I just checking online. They got beaded, like jewel encrusted handles on some of them.
Zircon encrusted pig whip. Well, pretty.
Yeah, just you Google pig whip.
That's the kind you'd get for Melania.
I guess. But yesterday, I found out where they're getting all the rock from Orville Dam.
Oh, really?
I'm right up the road from me.
Well, maybe they can...
About how to stop cold when big 18-wheel dump trucks, the long dumper on it.
And, yeah, oh, yeah.
And they're kind of half moon round. Well, he pulls out right in front of me from Highway 36, barely gets turned around. I mean, to go south toward Chico and Oroville. And I looked in there, it's full of rocks. So somewhere up the road there, they got some work going on, and it must be blasting them or something.
You know, it'd be kind of nice if they could clean out your creek and along the way, too. I mean, just saying.
They don't go that way. I don't know whether getting it, but that Highway 36 runs up to Mount Laugh, and there's somewhere up there they're getting the rock.
Well, pray God they don't find some coal while they're at it, or you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. And then there was an article in the paper today on Oroville Dam.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's the status? I mean, with the pouring down rains coming again, everybody got to go home. Is everybody going to have to turn around and leave again?
No, I think they got the lake down far enough that they can handle it. They throttled back the release a little bit. I think I read this morning, and then they got to clean out all the debris and stuff in front of where the powerhouse is, so they can start letting water back through there. And that, plus they got to hook up the power lines back to the powerhouse. They took them all down because they thought they might lose some of them big towers that were below the emergency spillway. So they got their guys fly in there on helicopters, and they land them on the towers, and they got to hook the wire back.
I mean, because this isn't the end of the problem. There's a lot of work to do there, and from the looks of the photographs I saw, it's going to be a while getting fixed.
Oh, yeah, they got to rebuild the original spillway. But the emergency spillway, I guess they've got a bunch of that filled in with rock and slurry. They're saying that tiny bubbles, a possible culprit in Oroville spillway failure. It's caused by a cavitation from the flowing water.
Yeah.
Maybe snort could, but they said the water vapor bubbles, and then they collapse with powerful force like little jackhammers. They start to chisel the concrete apart. And then they give this article I read, they give a bunch of examples of dams around the world that have failed, spillway failures. The Snork says it's called spalling. Well, they're calling it, in the article, they're calling it cavitation.
Well, I tell you what, it seems like they dodged one there. Hopefully they'll take the, now that they've had the rightness of that 2005 report proven to them, maybe they will act in accordance with it.
Yeah.
But, of course, that would require probably some federal funding. And
oh, Snork's on the phone, but anyway, I guess, but he says...
Yeah, I can talk. I want to butt in.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like cavitation is what creates the burst. Then you have the burst, and then spalling is the expelling of the concrete that gets ripped away. So they're all like part of a chain of reactions. It's like your brakes failing, the cavitation, the crunch. In the crunched car is the spalling at the end, you know, it's all part of the same accident.
Part of the overall chain of events.
Yeah. Spalling is what happens is you're left with the little, and it's actually, really similar to how horns are made in mountains. And it comes back to, the hydraulic forces are just incredible. And that's called frost riving, where a little bits of moisture get on the rocks. At night it freezes. The little things of ice get inside, and they expand at night. And then a little chip of rock comes out, and pretty soon you have an amphitheater. Well, pretty soon in geological times, it's a few million years. But
Right. But exploiting those cracks, and suddenly we're back to making stone tools again, huh?
Yeah, and I would say if I lived in California, I would find this absolutely frightening, the amount of water that's in there. And we had a very unusual event this year in that the El Nino was really fast and it's over. And we don't know at this point, are we returning to drought? Is every drop of water that we had to evacuate from that reservoir to be in our margin of safety going to be precious for Nestle?
Well, it's just worrisome to know how fragile the situation is and how, I don't know, is this a one-off or is this climate change? Because the distinction speaks to how quickly they have to remedy the problem and how likely the problem is to reoccur.
Yeah. Change to me is completely inappropriate. It's kind of like standard deviation and average shifting. As an average shifts and you get warmer and warmer, that climate change to me is, you know, it's changing in a direction. Where what we are actually experiencing is climate chaos. It's getting harder and harder to predict. We're outside the margins of what we understand about weather. So at this point, everybody is guessing. The oceans have never been this warm in a time that we would know of. In the records that we can study, we can't find any thing for millions of years in extremely bad situations that mimic any of the things that are going on. So you can say climate change would be like the constantly growing high tides in Florida, or climate change might be the getting earlier and earlier of the days that fruit starts growing in your region because of the temperature and other factors involved. The climate chaos is these sudden inrushes of bands of atmospheric rivers, where you have more water being dumped in California than is flowing out of the Amazon, the Yangtze, and the Mississippi rivers combined, all of a sudden, just in hours. That is such chaos. And as I said, between the average shifting and the standard deviation shift, each change now is getting more unpredictable than before. Now, the average might be just slowly creeping up, but we'll have an event. 5 years ago, we had an event where in the Midwest, we saw temperatures down in almost 50 degrees below zero in some places. Even as far as Illinois, people are experiencing minus 30 Fahrenheit. temperatures just are so fast. It's not unheard of to have 100-degree temperature change in one day anywhere in the United States now. Well, except for, I guess, Hawaii and Alaska. Well, Alaska, yeah. But when I was in Hawaii in 2014, I remember we had a cold night there. I think it was one of the coldest nights on records. So nothing's immune to it, but it's utter chaos. It's unmodelable. And every time climatologists go into their labs now, data is coming out that they don't know how to compare it to their records.
Does that make it unreliable data?
Well, yeah, because if they lose the inflow of 4 to 8 years of data, that's going to be devastating to the world, because the United States was really at the forefront of climatological science. Glaciologists are being muted because You know, they can't get funding for things that their administrators now.
Well, and I mean, the reason I ask that is because if you don't know how to interpret the data, does that make the data unreliable on the low side? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, I mean,
in other words, you may be looking at something that means something far worse than what you think you're looking at.
Yeah, it's like the argument right now with the astronomers with Apophis. You know, they're arguing that, we seem to have gotten the albedo wrong for the near Earth crossing orbit object, Apophis. They're trying to decide if it's actually going to miss or not in 2029. And if it doesn't miss in 2029 with its different albedo calculations that they have to make, is it or is it not going to hit Turkey in 3031 or 2031? And these are...
That's kind of... is it or is it going to hit Turkey? That's kind of a... that's not a pass fail exam, Snork.
Well, the other thing is we have people that want Israel destroyed really bad.
So
they can have a party. And 2018 is the window for changing the orbit of Apophis. There's so far out you have to get out, and you have to, you know, with the available stuff that we can push it with. You can't blow it up. You got to push it. So if 2018 is the window of opportunity we have, who's president then? And can we trust them to say we want to push
it? Well, I mean, are the Israelis looking at it?
Well, right now they're happy that it's going toward Turkey. I bet they're looking at it somewhere. But, you know, like I said, my concern is... Do we trust them to actually push it away? That's a near target change.
How big are we talking about?
Let me get a quick pull up on that.
I mean, do you have a kiloton estimate yield?
It'd be megatons.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, of course. We regret the error.
Apophis 99942. Let's see.
And this is the stuff that just runs around inside your noggin, right, Snork?
Yeah, sorry about that. Did I get us off track?
No. I'm glad it's running around yours instead of mine, because I wouldn't be able to get out of bed in the morning.
Maybe I shouldn't bother anybody. It's only got a 1 in 300 chance of hitting in 2029 if the original data is correct on the albedo.
If
1
in
42 if they've missed it a little bit. I'm still trying to look at what...
From a cost-benefit analysis, a 1 in 300 chance, probably not worth all the money and effort that would go into giving it a shove, is it?
Yeah, well, that's what they did for the... some of the safety factors for the nuclear power plants, Fort Calhoun in Nebraska, which has now been shut down. They originally calculated that a 500 year flood only happens once every 500 years. So the risk of, a flood impacting and causing a meltdown was less than, 1/20 of a percent or whatever. So they said, well, that means it's not important. Let's not care for it. Let's put it right in the floodplain of the Missouri River.
What could possibly go wrong with those odds? Yeah, sure. Freaking accountants.
And
yeah.
We came...
Damned actuaries.
Quarter of an inch just a few years ago of losing the Midwest.
That's a mighty narrow.
They put out warnings that when all the power was lost and they were trying to keep the cooling going to the cooling systems going, they started using gasoline pumps and they and generators. And to have the gasoline delivered, they had to use rowboats because powered motors would have caused a wake that would have initiated what they didn't want to happen.
Jesus.
And that's about the status of almost every nuclear plant in the United States is did not adequately prepare for hydraulic issues.
Oh, by the way, I'm getting pushback from Australia on Ken Ham. Robert just wrote in, subject line, he's your problem. Look, he was born here in Oz, but he's your problem now, okay? No, not okay. Not okay. I reject the premise, Robert. Robert says, we were smart enough to get rid of him. Perhaps you could ship him to China, just not back here. There's an idea. How about an Ark Encounter in China?
Apophis, 325 meter wide. If it were to impact sedimentary rock, it would only create a 4.3 kilometer impact crater. 4.3 miles. That would be, well, and it's called, it would wipe out an area with the blast radius would be thousands of square kilometers. Long-lasting global effects.
Yeah, long-lasting.
Including an impact winter for the entire entire planet.
What a mess. By the way, Randy in PA wants $18 million for his Pastafarian theme park.
That would be cool.
Of course, you have to be a believer in the Flying Spaghetti Monster in order to work there. And, you know, I could get behind that. I mean, that would be fun. Because some there you'd have to have a tree and a mountain and a dwarf. And you'd have to have a beer volcano and a stripper factory. You know, just park me under the beer volcano and everybody else go have fun.
And all you can eat pasta fest for the communion.
Oh, ramen. Well, I just saw Roger, pop in. Haven't heard from Roger for a while. Are you there, Roger?
Evening.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy. I've been a little bit busy. I'm going to be moving out of Northern California and going up to Eugene, Oregon, and shutting down the farm and trying to clean out 37 years of crap in my house and barn and all that kind of stuff, and been real busy. But I just decided to check in because I wanted to listen to Sparky talk about Oroville.
Well, how's the cleaning up 37 years worth of stuff going?
Not good.
I can kind of imagine. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, when you got a 5,000 square foot barn you've been storing crap in for 37 years, there's a whole lot to clean out and try to get ready for yard sale, garage sale, and fill up dumpsters that you haven't thrown shit away from for a whole lot of years. There's a lot of crap that's just garbage but needs to disappear. And anyhow, and it's pouring down rain, and it's kind of a pain in the rear to work outside and do all that stuff. So it's a slow process, but it's coming along.
So what's the time frame on the big move?
Oh, we get the house March 1st, and I figure by September we'll be moved.
Wow. So is this rent a great big truck kind of U-Haul kind of affair, or you gonna?
I'm going to be doing trailer stuff and moving a bunch of my own. But when it comes time for the beds, the dressers, and bookcases and that kind of stuff, I'm calling in a moving company to do it.
Probably the better part of valor. So no gardening in Eugene.
I'll have some pots on the porch and learn how to grow tomatoes, which I've never grown before. But I'm giving up on my growing seed for Baker Creek seeds out of Missouri and things of that sort. So it's a pretty big change.
Well, it sounds like. Well, I'm awful glad to see you pop in. It's been entirely too long.
Yeah, well, I just sent off my seed stock back to Baker Creek, and so somebody else is going to take over my seed varieties and that kind of stuff. And if they find somebody else to grow them and then sell them through their catalog, that's great. And if they don't, I saved a few for myself that I can play with up there. But no, I'm just getting too old, too tired, and I just really don't want to do the farming anymore. I'm 71, and it's kind of time to retire from my third or fourth career.
Well, are you going to be politically? I hope this is a silly question. Are you going to be politically active up there?
Does a bear shit in the woods?
Exactly. Silly question. Good. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be politically active. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I'm just sitting back and just so enjoying right now. And every time I say, well, what are you doing? I'm just watching. I'm just enjoying. I'm just watching. I mean, Fox News finally called him out. You know, Jesus Christ, it's been 15 years, and they've given those Republican pieces of crap a free rein. And now all of a sudden they're going, wait a minute, he lied at his news conference. Ha ha.
Yeah, which folks? One? I mean, it's not like there was only one.
Yeah, and I'm just sitting back and drinking beer and enjoying the show. It's a bizarre number to me that it's taken this much crap to finally get a few people to wake up. But what they're doing right now is they're letting Trump do the same thing he did with the election in manipulating the media to focus on him. And now Ryan and McConnell are shoving all this crap through Congress, but nobody's paying any attention to, like eliminating the EPA and DeVos with the education number. And I mean, I could go on and on. But they're letting Trump be the attraction and sliding all this Tea Party crap through Congress. And people are, oh, my God, food prices are going up. Well, yeah, if you get rid of all the immigrant labor where they should have been putting the farmers to jail for hiring immigrant labor, but you loved your low food prices. And, I'm just having fun watching the shit come down.
Well, you know, one of the I don't know if you heard this, speaking of stuff that goes uncovered, but before I mention that, Roger, I got to thinking this morning about because I fell for it too, the oh my God hissy over, but it's hard not to talk about something of the magnitude of duplicity and mendacity as what we saw yesterday. How do you pretend that didn't happen? I mean, I don't think I was shocked, but, you know, goddamn, really? But by the same token, yeah, oh, look, we're doing exactly what happened during the campaign.
It's just a fun sideshow to watch. I don't have any incredible insight after having been political back in the days of Eugene McCarthy back in 68. I don't have any insight to it. I'm just telling all these people that have been lovely needling me for all these years about you goddamn liberal, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they say, oh, they're going to get rid of the EPA. By God, we're going to be able to do shit. I said, yeah, look at the pictures of Los Angeles back in the 1970s. Couldn't even see the skyline. Couldn't see it in New York. Now you can see the skyline. Do you think that's good? Oh, yeah, it's great to see the skyline. Well, the EPA did that. The EPA was created by Nixon, written by the corporations, and now they're bitching about it's too restrictive. Well, F you, folks. Come on. I mean, you know, if you think the 1970s EPA was bad. Wait till the 2020 EPA comes back when folks finally figure out that, wait a minute, we can't poison everybody, and you're doing it with the AIC Act, and we're going to be doing it, you know, with all kinds of stuff. Oh, my God, we can't gold mine in the rivers anymore. No, we're trying to save the fish. But, oh, my God, the Sierra Club and the Environmental Protection Agency quit us doing suction mining in the rivers. Well, there's a reason for it. You're killing off the salmon fishermen. And yet the salmon fishermen turn around and go, we don't want all these regulations because it's shutting down our season. We can't fish. Well, you can't fish because there ain't no goddamn fish. And I'm at a stage in my life, I'm just sitting back and watching it happen.
Oh, it's hard. It's hard to argue with that. But by the same token, I mean, as you know there's going to be consequences.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a story, in fact, Larry sent it along to me. Saw a story from earlier today. The ICE folks, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they were supposed to have a meeting in Congress today. And so some members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus showed up for the meeting, you know, not to protest or throw things or call them things that were probably dirty words in Spanish that those poor little Republicans didn't understand, but to find out what the is actually going on in this country. Well, the Republican chairman of the committee, Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, in conjunction with the House Speaker Paul Ryan, had the Congressional Hispanic Caucus thrown out of the meeting. Not really. They deported the Congressional Hispanic Caucus from the meeting.
Well, what's so different from that when they shut down, who was it was reading Coretta Scott King's letter?
Elizabeth Warren, yeah.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren, they shut her down. What's different from that, from ICE did a little bit of a raid and grabbed a guy and had him in custody when his transgender partner was at a courthouse, I think it was down in Texas, was getting a restraining order for abuse, and ICE claimed they caught him, on the street, and the video shows him coming into the courtroom, waiting in the courtroom until she gave her testimony requesting a restraining order, and threw her in handcuffs and hustled her out of the courthouse. So now any, quote, illegal alien, which I hate calling people illegal, undocumented person, can no longer go to our court system and say, I'm getting a shit beat out of me, I need a restraining order. Because if they're undocumented, all of a sudden they're going to get put on a bus and sent back to whatever country or an airplane, and they're not getting protected. What is this country coming to?
And that's the ultimate question, and the ultimate answer is nobody knows. I mean, you've got ICE rounding people up outside of hypothermia shelters in churches. At one point in time, the order went out from the Obama administration to leave the churches alone.
Well, and they called them dreamers. There was a dreamer, i.e. brought to this country like 2 years old, only place he's ever lived, goes over to visit his father, ICE comes in, they're trying to bust the father, and they bust the guy that was protected under the Obama number. To export him back to whatever country he came from is absolute bullshit. He's not part of that country. He is an American. They have rounded up veterans, and they thought they were going to get citizenship by serving in the military, and they didn't file the paperwork on time, whatever. And all of a sudden they're being rounded up and deported after they've served one, two, three tours in the military. To me, this is just absolute bullshit. And yet it's going on, and I'm just a little dude living here in Northern California. I really can't do anything about it. We have a good congressman. He does his best. But after this election, I'm just trying to crawl into a cocoon and kiss my ass goodbye.
Well, unfortunately, Roger. Hey, everybody. Good to hear you again, Roger. Hey, that's unfortunately what fascism looks like, you know? You know?
Oh, yeah, it's what fascism kind of stuff, looks like.
Rounding people up, you know, based on their ethnicity or their color or religion or whatever, you know? And that's you know, that's part of the program, I think, you know?
Well, this idea rounding up 100,000 National Guardsmen because mm-hmm. of the Posse Comitatus law, we can't use the Army, so we can use the National Guardsmen to run around the streets. And if I were a little bit more enticed, and I kind of have the skills, but not really, is to grab a picture of a National Guardsman from, like, Kent State back in the 1970 mm-hmm. and put some little SS tabs on their collars post it back again and saying, this is where America is. I mean, if he wants to, it won't happen in California. I'm convinced Governor Brown won't allow it. But if he wants to mobilize the National Guard to run around the streets of this country, rounding up, quote, illegal aliens, unquote, it's nothing different than the SS rounding up Jews. And the farmers all across the South and into California are screaming bloody murder because right now crops are rotting in the field because they can't hire people to harvest them.
Are they already starting to rot in the fields, Roger?
Oh, yeah. And when your produce mm-hmm. doubles in price, which is going to happen in a week or two, when your produce in the market doubles in price, people are going to go, oh, my God, the supermarket's ripping me off. No.
You're making America great again.
The farmers that have been hiring illegal aliens for years that should have been busted Reagan kicked that out, but they should have been busted for hiring people from outside this country that weren't legally documented because they wouldn't pay the price. They're going to suffer. The farmers are going to suffer. They're the Republicans that voted Trump in, and they're pissing and moaning because they're going to go broke because we can't find labor. Well, pay the price.
Right.
Actually, it's a good example of greed versus reality. Because in reality, like with corn, you can double the price of corn, and it only raises the price of a box of a cereal by about 10 cents. I mean, double the price of the labor for corn. There's fruit's a little bit more labor intensive than corn, but I feel that there'll be a lot of gouging. There'll be a lot of excuses for raising the prices far beyond what is necessary, even to raise their wages $2 or $3 an hour.
And inside this, inside this 100,000 National Guard SS unit story, there's tucked away one little fact that kind of leaped off the page at me. The way it's laid out in General John Kelly's memorandum, the governors of the four states with contiguous borders with Mexico, namely Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, have the right, would have the right, to refuse to participate with that state's National Guard. Because, of course, it's foolhardy to think that the only people in the National Guard in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California are, of course, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical white folks. So, you know, theoretically, maybe the Guard wouldn't want to turn on their own, or might have family subject. You know, wouldn't it be nice if Sonny rounded up Mommy and Daddy? So the governors get to say, no thanks, I don't think we'll participate. What happens after that, though? That would mean that, you know how Trump said, a couple of weeks ago, California was out of control and that would be taken care of pretty quickly? Wonder how California would love to have the National Guard from, say, Alabama and Mississippi patrolling its streets. At that point in time, guess what? Yeah, that's right, boys and girls. That's an invasion.
I'm not sure on something like that a National Guard unit from another state could invade another state.
That's what the memo says.
Well, I'm thinking
National in event of a national disaster, in which case you federalize the National Guards, you can pretty much send them where you want to.
Yeah, but we still have the posse comitatus. And as soon as the National Guard is federalized, it comes under the Army. And now you've got your posse comitatus rules that say the U.S. military cannot be used within the United States. And this whole thing about not nationalizing, but using the National Guard and making them ICE folk is up to the governors. And I think that, and I don't know the names of some other governors, but I think Jerry Brown could say, no, you will not bring in Nevada National Guard into California. I'm not positive.
Well,
on that.
I understand what you're saying, but this is one of those Justice Marshall has given his ruling, now let him enforce it kind of things, you know, Andrew Jackson. Because, okay, so Trump decides to do that, rolls the Nevada National Guard or the Utah National Guard. No, really. How about the West Virginia National Guard in California? They'd never come home into California. And in the meantime, Jerry Brown says no. Well, that's got to be tested in court, and that takes time. And
well, not if Jerry Brown mobilizes the California National Guard and sends them to the agricultural check stations and says, hey, we're not letting these troops into California, and turn them away at the border.
That almost sounds like a recipe for civil war.
What? No shit.
That's what Bannon wants. It's
called
Bannon
states'
hope.
Rights.
Well, you know, the whole reason Bannon is where he is he wants to foment a civil war any way he can. The guy wants to tear it all down.
Yeah, he claimed to be a Leninist.
Well, yeah, exactly. He doesn't want the state to exist. He's, I guess, an anarcho-fascist, I guess, is the phrase. So, very dangerous guy. And people like him are still around there. I mean, Michael Flynn is out, fortunately, but, you know. and, of course, he didn't do anything wrong, according to the Trumpeteer, you know. He was just treated
very... He didn't do anything wrong if you ignore the Logan Act.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it seems to me, under these circumstances, it might well be a good idea for Jerry Brown to get proactive in a real damn hurry and say, not here, no way. And lay down that marker in front of Trump and call his goddamn bluff and see what he does.
Well, a few years ago, maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, something like that, at a Redwood Forest, Redwood Summer number, I spent about a half hour walking down a dirt road chatting with Jerry Brown about a whole bunch of weird, different stuff. And he seriously impressed me about his knowledge, thought process, and all the rest of it. And I can't predict what he's going to do, but do not ever underestimate Jerry Brown. There is one smart person there. And he... I mean, he's the only governor California ever had for 16 years. Come on, you got to be doing something good if you're going to be governor of California for 16 years over the course of about 40 years. I'm not sure about that number, but Jerry Brown is one incredible individual. And if you ever, ever had the opportunity to do a one-on-one chat with him, do not ever say anything that is off-the-wall kind of number, because he will nail you. That man has a brain. He's probably the most intelligent, knowledgeable individual I have ever, ever had the opportunity to converse with. And that includes Linus Pauling, for some people who know names.
Yes.
I would put Jerry Brown above Linus Pauling. And I have had conversations with Linus Pauling as well. But Jerry Brown is oh, my God. Mm. Don't screw with him.
Yeah.
Well, see, once upon a time, smart people, we sort of expected or hoped that some politicians would be smart people. Now we have a divergence. American politics is not where smart people go, at least not on the Republican side. Oh, and
the kind of politicians we look for are the ones that we want to have a beer with, you know, or people who are who tell it like it is, you know, and aren't politically correct.
Or
you know,
yeah, I can trust them because they tell everybody they're Christian.
There you go. Jeez.
I don't want to have a beer with Jerry Brown because I can't keep up with him.
On the beer or the conversation?
No, the conversation. And I'm not an ignorant SOB. I consider myself to be articulate and reasonable and knowledgeable and all the rest of it. But when I was talking to Jerry Brown, man, he was blowing me out of the water. I can hold my own with my congressman and my California state legislators and all that. I mean, I can have conversations with them and hit them with stuff they don't know about. But when I tried to hit Jerry Brown up with some stuff he didn't know about, obviously this was his Redwood summer when we were talking about the Redwood National Park and trying to stop the clear cutting of the old forests and that kind of stuff. And this is where I live, so I'm knowledgeable. But every time I hit him up with something, he already knew about it. He was so prepared. It was unbelievable. And when I look back at the press conferences that Barack Obama and some reporter got up and asked him a question, Barack Obama had an answer for it. He knew the background immediately. And this last press conference, I didn't watch it. I just heard about it. A question got asked, and he goes, I'm thinking the black lady reporter right now, where she said, have you thought about having a conversation with the Congressional Black Caucus? She used CBC. And he did not know what the CBC was. I mean, this guy is so ignorant.
Well,
he has no business.
That other moment, Roger, when he started talking about his massive Electoral College victory, and the reporter was ready for that shit and just fact-checked him live in real time and said...
And he got pissed.
No, he got contrite. Well, I just heard that. That was something somebody told me. That's something that something's out there.
This man has no business.
Called directly, he shut right down.
Yeah, and this is not the person I want as my president, and it has nothing to do with politics. This man is so ignorant, I don't want him as my president. I could be a better president, I think.
He's not just ignorant, he's scary as well.
Well, it's not just that he's ignorant, he's willfully ignorant, and he's a liar. Like I mentioned last night, he goes around saying, you know, I got very good marks in Wharton. Look, he transferred in as a junior. He was only there 2 years. He never shows up on the dean's list. He said, I was top in my class. No, he wasn't. At his commencement exercises, he was not laude, cum laude, magna cum laude, summa cum laude. He was just loud.
Well, they did a photo I saw on internet today of the graduation program the year he graduated, and his name's not on it. In the honor side.
He's dangerous, too. That's what scares me. That whole press conference was supposed to be about naming the new Secretary of Defense, Bob Howard. And Bob Howard come out and said later on, I don't want no...
No, actually, Steve, it was about naming the new Labor Secretary nominee.
Okay. All right. Was it Bob Howard? One of them said...
Yeah, Harwood said it was a shit sandwich and he wasn't going to bite.
Shit sandwich? Yeah, okay. Well, I'm sorry I got my facts confused. But he's... That oven in itself, that you don't get confirmation. Hell, if I ran a business, I would at least make sure that somebody wanted the job before I threw it out there to him. I mean, he has the brain of a dodo bird.
Yeah, I think you're going kind of rough on the dodos.
Yeah, at least the dodo bird knew how to land.
Yeah. And, Bob, I like your plan. I really do, about waiting until 2018 and then getting rid of Trump and Pence and bringing in somebody else, you know, hopefully that we win that. But there's a flaw in that plan.
Yeah, winning both houses in 2018, including a two-thirds majority to convict in the Senate.
But another flaw is I don't think we can wait that long, my friend.
Well, I'm not. And by the way, thank you to you and Ms. Karen and Cletus. Thank you, Cletus. Cletus, you're a good girl. For getting us started this evening. That's the first and only that's come in. So we've got $180 to go in about an hour and 5 minutes. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. This is the real and sobering reality, okay? There ain't nothing out there. I mean, I got a headline in front of me right now. Congress explores options for removing an unfit president as Trump's disturbing behavior worries GOP. Well, there's only one fit or unfit, criminal or non-criminal. There is only one way to remove the president from office under the Constitution.
25th Amendment.
No. Impeachment.
Okay. Well, there's also an amendment.
That's the only thing Congress can do.
Okay.
I saw some commenter somewhere on some Twitter thread saying, I sure hope Congress will get busy on the 25th Amendment. And I just facepalmed, and it's like, God damn, is anybody paying attention? The 25th Amendment.
Of the lack of civic education in this country, Bob.
Well, yeah, it is, Rick. But, I mean, let's make it abundantly clear here so at least here in the Horn Family Community Congregation we understand.
We got it straight. Yep.
The 25th Amendment can only be triggered by the cabinet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not going to happen with this cabinet that he has preloaded.
Okay. Well, I haven't mentioned this. I've had it bubbling around in my brain. So let's talk about this for a second. That's my inclination too. When they drafted and ratified the 25th Amendment, yeah, sure. Presidents choose cabinets that are going to do the bidding of the president and help fulfill the policy agenda. But that was a different America where having an ally was much more a matter of allies than it was sycophants, okay? In Republican presidential administrations now, they are chosen as much for their loyalty and their sycophancy as for any expertise. I mean, great goddamn Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education,
Jesus
really?
Christ.
Because there's no expertise there. Scott Pruitt, EPA, no expertise there. Nothing but willful vandalism, okay?
He's expert at suing the EPA, Bob.
Sleepy Ben Carson at HUD? No.
They're there to tear down the actual institutions that they put, put them in charge of.
Now here's where my and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to shut you down, Steve. Just bear with me because sometimes I got to flesh this stuff out. And I don't put a whole lot of hope in this. But I see one member of the cabinet, and he's kind of crazy. I see one member of the cabinet who might be willing to stand up and maybe try to strong arm the others if Trump gets absolutely in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue in a tutu barking mad.
You're talking General Mattis, right?
I am indeed, Rick.
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
yeah, he's the one cabinet guy, I think, who's pretty good, actually.
Well, he's the one cabinet guy who's got an iota of independence about him. And that old Marines is old Marines.
Yeah, right. Right.
And there might, I don't know, you tell me, do you think there might be one molecule of Smedley Butler in him?
Patriotism, yes. We can hope.
Yeah.
And you know, so maybe that's where the pressure point is.
Mm.
But my way of thinking is, if we can just get rid of Trump, yeah, we're stuck with Pence. Pence is an ideologue, but at least he's not fucking crazy, man.
Oh, I'm not so sure. No, look, that's why I wrote the thing on Facebook I wrote a couple of days ago. And what I said is coming true. Where the thing about Flynn had been, you know, the reason he was allegedly ditched, and you'll notice yesterday, Trump said, and that's why I fired him. He didn't. Flynn resigned, complete with a resignation letter. There's a big damn difference between being fired and resigning.
It all goes back to that narcissistic thing that we talked about yesterday, Bob.
Yeah, but dig this, though. The reason he jumped or was pushed is because he lied to Pence.
Mm-hmm.
And I said a couple of days ago, you watch, this thing is going to turn from the Pence Pence-Flynn issue to Flynn-Trump. And not, you know, and not for no reason. Because I think it was Michael Moore who said, you know, arrest Trump now. There's no way Flynn made those phone calls on his own initiative.
Right, and you could get a twofer if we can wait out 2 years, and if we win all this, and we're going to be underdogs, let's face it.
Well, if you get a twofer now, and understand,
you're
talking...
You're stuck with Paul Ryan. Yeah.
You get Paul Ryan.
That's it.
But that also means that Paul Ryan doesn't get to strong-arm his wet dream Ayn Rand fantasies through the Congress.
But and this as is, president, and this he is can all, use the bully pulpit, though.
You know, this is all Powerball odds at this point in time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's, just to return to your original point of departure, Steve, there's nothing. And we need to understand that. And that's why I keep harping on it and harping on it and harping on it that we are right now, this very instant, in a constitutional crisis.
A constitutional crisis. I hear you, brother. I hear you.
I mean, if the Constitution, you know, was working as it should, Trump would have been impeached already for violating the Emoluments Clause.
Right, as soon as he was sworn in.
Yeah, and see, I'm not, Rick, you know, I'm not there.
Well.
Rick, aren't you an attorney?
Yeah,
oh,
Rick.
Yeah.
But I'm not there, Rick. You know why?
Why is that?
Because the Emoluments Clause says that it can be remedied by consent of Congress.
Right.
So if the heat
fact,
on the
emoluments, yeah.
if the heat on the emoluments, yeah, if the heat on the emoluments clause gets hot enough, then all Congress has to do is sit down and say, "We consent."
We give you a hall pass, basically.
Yeah,
and they can consent prospectively as well as retrospectively.
And as angry as people got at Nancy Pelosi for saying that he hasn't done anything impeachable yet,
right?
She was probably right.
Probably so, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, because in the end, Bob, impeachment becomes a political judgment, whether there's the you have the criteria to do it. It's an inherently political act, impeachment.
Well, it is, and you know,
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
What constitutes high crimes and misdemeanors is equally political, and it is, as we now know, in the few instances...
In the eye of the accuser.
Right. It's determined on an ad hoc basis.
Exactly. Right. Like a blowjob is impeachable, or lying about a blowjob is impeachable, but, you know, basically feathering your bed is fine if you're Trump, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Bob, we hadn't heard from Don tonight. Can we bring him in here and get some thoughts from him?
Well, sure, sure. Hey, Don.
Hi, everybody. How's it going tonight?
Vibrant and energetic as ever.
Pissed it off.
Yeah. That's, I don't know if you'd be interested, but I've been playing around with the county level election data.
Yeah.
In the state of Pennsylvania. And you know how they always say that Pennsylvania's Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Alabama in between?
Right.
Well, with respect to the election, not quite. I took the data and took out Philadelphia and Allegheny counties where Pittsburgh is. And the percentage of voters for Trump went to 54.88%, up from 48.79%. Alabama is 62.89, so we're still not close to them. However, I believe Charlie Pierce calls them the home office of America's sedition.
South Carolina?
Yes, 54.86%.
Well, one of the interesting statistics that, and everybody knows I've got my issues with Bill Maher, but one of the interesting statistics that he cranked out last Friday was the fact that all the states that flipped, all the counties in Pennsylvania that flipped from Obama to Trump are the ones with the greatest opioid problems in the state.
I would believe that. But, when I was doing that, Philadelphia has Bucks, Delaware, and Montgomery counties border it. They all went for Hillary. So I took them out, and the percent went to 58.99, which puts us ahead of 58.34% of Mississippi, but not quite the Idaho.
Did you happen to, and of course, did you happen to look at West Virginia? We are the Trumpiest state in the Union.
I beg to differ, Bob. I think Wyoming has you beat by about 2%.
Not by everything that I've read.
I looked at a couple places, and West Virginia was 68.65, and Wyoming was 70.05.
The Trumpansies here are going to be pissed.
Well, you could always explain it away by saying Wyoming, that included the Cheneys and grizzly bears.
Jeez.
And cattle.
Well, I think you've done a deep dive into those numbers, Don. So I think you've proved that West Virginia is not the Trumpiest state. So sorry to disappoint all your compadres there, Bob.
They ain't my compadres. I'm just worried about them invading Wyoming now.
Well,
and hell, there's some coal jobs out there.
Coal keeps the lights on.
Yee, ski.
Well, Bob, they might not have to go too far to invade, because I took the county I live in the neighboring counties, and I live in Huntington County, which was 73.7% Trumpian. On the north, we have Center County, which actually went for Hillary. It's 46.55. But that's where Penn State's located, and we know what a viper's nest the liberals that would be.
Well, we used to assume that, but is that necessarily the case now?
Yeah, I think it is. That, like I said, that county did go for Hillary, so, and the outlying areas away from State College, they're pretty Trumpian. But then going clockwise around the other counties that border us, we have 71.54%, 82.77%, 84.18%, 71.46%, 79.10%, and 77.03%. And so I totaled those up and come up with 66.75%, which puts this area ahead of Oklahoma. And
wow,
just slightly behind West Virginia.
Where are you relative to Mississippi?
Well, we're way ahead of Mississippi.
Really? But Mississippi is less Trumpy than, oh my God.
Yeah, Mississippi is 58.34% compared to the 66.75%. But I took out Center County then to get rid of the Penn State influence, and it goes up to 74.37%, which shoots us ahead of West Virginia and Wyoming. So if you folks want to invade,
it's a shorter trip to Pennsylvania.
Just yes,
head north and probably better eats.
Yeah, you could go to Berkeley Springs and then go through Hancock, Maryland, and just you'd be there.
Yeah, just follow the pole star, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Hillbillies ain't got no problem with scrapple.
Yeah. Well, I went to the store the other day and they're sold out of scrapple.
Yeah, I think scrapple, that must be just like ancient German for parts is parts. You know,
yeah, that's, it's a
little hoof, little cheek, little tongue, little toenail. Yeah. Scrapple. You know,
anything that wasn't ham or bacon or like ribs.
Yeah. Or it chops just, or yeah. Loin or right. Yeah. But everything but the oink.
What would you say West Virginia was?
West Virginia was 68.65.
Oh, I looked up my county. It's 64.8 for Trump.
Sheesh.
But I started thinking about that, Bob, and this 74%, that's 3 out of 4 people. Now, if I'm standing in a line at the grocery store and there's 4 people in front of me, 3 of those people are probably Trumpanzees. You know, I'm driving down the street and there's 4 cars coming the other way. You know, 3 of them are driven by.
It almost brings on a sense of isolation, doesn't it, Don?
Pretty much. And that's...
Yeah, I mean, these are the people you stand in line at the grocery store, you're pumping gas next to them at the Rippy Mart, you go to the post office, they're standing there, and until this past November, you kind of thought, well, you know, so-and-so's a pretty good guy. Do you still think that?
No.
Did you think that before?
I was willing to cut him some slack.
Well, you can't carry an unlicensed firearm in your pocket in Pennsylvania yet, can you?
No, it's you have to get a concealed carry permit.
Well, as you get more and more West Virginia, you'll see that go away. Oh, okay, okay. You got some pushback. East Bay Bruce just wrote in and said, subject line: WV is Trumpiest. You are correct. West Virginia's Trumpiest, 68.63% versus 67.4% in Wyoming. So I think we have a real live, honest to God, no kidding controversy going now.
Okay, yeah, that's...
Don, where does Georgia stand fit in on that scale? Do you know?
It's on the other computer. I don't have it handy.
You've got too many normal people in greater Atlanta, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. And a lot of South Georgia too, around the Macon area. So.
Oh, are there normal people there too?
Yeah.
I'll tell you part of Georgia I'm terribly fond of is that area south of Savannah. That's some pretty damn country.
What do you mean, like 16, going towards Savannah between Macon and Savannah?
No, down around Brunswick.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, there are some good folks there, absolutely.
Beautiful, beautiful country. And, you know, when I was there, Jesus, 5, 6 years ago, you know, that place had just been economically hammered. But again, it had been economically hammered by... not that one in our White House, but by, you know, George W. Bush, which brings me back around to why I stay so frustrated and, you know, pissed off. I'm supposed to believe that all these economically anxious white people went to the polls and punished Hillary Clinton because they'd become economically anxious under Barack Obama over things that were actually done to them by George W. Bush. And if that's the case, I don't have a lot of respect for their intellect. Is that okay? Or is that me being a hillbilly elitist again?
No. That's absolutely okay.
Oh, and by the way, regarding the stats in Pennsylvania versus West Virginia, Ron in the far frozen north says it still boils down to the fact that roughly 2 out of 3 voters were suckers. And it does. And, you know, they don't like it when you tell them that. But not liking it doesn't make it less true.
Well, I think the sad thing, too, is, Bob, they're talking about, like, 2018 and, you know, flipping seats in the House. Where I live, even if people are pissed off at Trump,
it's going to be difficult.
They're going to primary the current Republican. I mean, there's no way that there's ever going to be a Democrat elected. And if they primary him, they're going to put in some Tea Party nitwit, and you're going to have a worse situation than you do now. I mean, you're going to have another Louie Gohmert or Michelle Bachmann or...
Oh, God.
You know, someone
and
like
therein
that.
Lies the problem. I know by virtue of the fact that I'm having this conversation with you, Don, that there are sane progressive people in your district. So why are there no sane progressive Democrats getting on the ballot? There's got to be one.
I think it's... They know it's a lost cause. I'll give you an example, Bob. I live in the 5th Congressional District. It used to be the 9th until they gerrymandered. But the 9th is Billy Schuster's district. It goes like southern Pennsylvania, like south of me, like over towards Pittsburgh. The Democrats this year did not endorse anybody for the congressional seat. They had one person who tried to mount a write-in campaign. Well, he didn't win the write-in campaign. The write-in campaign was won by a person by the name of Art Halverson, who was a Tea Party favorite. And his signs had Art Halverson for Congress, Rescue America. So he became the Democratic nominee, and he said that, well, yeah, even if I'm elected as a Democrat, I'm going to go with the Republicans, and I'm going to be a member of the Freedom Caucus, which, you know, what kind of halfwits they are.
They ain't halfwits by half.
Right, but the Democrats wouldn't even endorse candidate, you know, for the seat. They just said to hell with it, and... On the local level, that happens. Like the state senator that represents my district, he's a Tea Party favorite. He's a member of ALEC. You know, he's a Koch puppet. He gets 98% of the vote. Nobody runs against him.
But, Don, I bet when you do run those numbers in Georgia, and if you could, I'd like to see him, anything north of Fulton County or Alpharetta, north, is probably that 3 out of 4 ratio that you spoke of earlier.
Blood red.
Yes.
I was going to say, what I can do is the same thing I did with Pennsylvania. I can take out, like, Atlanta and, I don't know, say, with the county of that Athens.
Just North Fulton, northward, for the whole state. I'll bet you you're at that 3 out of 4. Because I'm here. I'm in the belly of the beast. So is Mike Malloy. We know what we're up against here, but there are a few sane people, but we're so outnumbered, we feel hopeless. Like, you probably get that sense of hopelessness, don't you, Bob? Or
No, I reject hopelessness. I'm all into reality, but things. Look, we're talking about, you know, is there a way out of this problem? Short of another presidential election. That means I've got something that passes for hope. I mean, if I just do the abandon hope, all ye who enter here thing, then I might as well turn off the mic and just, you know, learn to say welcome to Walmart.
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
And then let's not do that.
Yeah, that's I understand.
Hey,
that
Jules. Point,
but... Hello. You know, the state that would be an interesting one to see is Pence's home state, where I'm at. Indiana.
Well, up there in East Chicago, we know that that actually went for Hillary, and that's why they were. That's why their Flint-style lead crisis was so thoroughly ignored.
You go probably Fort Wayne South, which is northeast Indiana South, and you're going to find a big difference. Indianapolis will be, and if take Fort Wayne and Indianapolis out of the mix, and you're going to see a huge difference. And the further south you get, the higher the numbers are going to get for the Republicans. South Central, mostly, it's going to be really, really fucking red. Because Indiana is a KKK heaven.
Well, Indiana is also a traditionally Republican state.
Yeah, well, we're the only state that's, I mean, really red south of the, or north of the Mason-Dixon line. I mean, actually red. The other ones went red just because they went red, but we truly stay red.
Yeah, and have been for 100 years.
Yeah.
I maintain that it's got something to do with the fact that the place is so goddamn flat. The sun comes up at 3 a.m. and nobody ever gets a decent night's sleep. But I want to take a moment. I want to take a moment, and before I do, just a general reminder. We got 40 minutes to go in the program, and we got $180 to raise just to finish the week good, to finish the week even, and not have a hole come Monday. So that's there. Hopefully, members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will respond. 5, 10 doesn't matter. It all adds up. But I want to go back to this impeachment thing, and Rick. Billable hat on.
Well, I'm billing, so go ahead. I'm listening. Okay.
The actual part of the Constitution that deals with impeachment, Article 2, Section 4.
Okay.
Is another one of those parts of the Constitution that there ain't a lot of. Here it is.
Okay.
The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Okay.
Now we're all set with that language, right?
Right.
And treason, bribery, and or other high crimes and misdemeanors, those are all acts. Okay.
Right.
And in point of fact. To get into some lawyery language, they are actus rea, are they not?
They are, yeah.
And arguably, even if it's only a misdemeanor, it still requires some degree of mens rea, correct?
That is correct. You got it. Mental intent to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice what's not in there? Let me help.
Okay.
The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, or if they're fucking nuts.
Yeah, there you go.
You cannot, I simply put forward, You cannot impeach the President for being insane.
No, I think you have to rely on the Kennedy solution there, Bob.
To wit?
Yeah.
No. To wit what? Yeah. Oh, never mind. We're not going any further.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
But really, this is serious.
Yeah, no, I know.
You can't
It is.
If it should prove that the spirochetes have finally finished eating the last of his brain cells. If you could prove, as we were discussing last night, Steve, that he is, in fact, descending into the depths of dementia.
the Constitution does not provide impeachment grounds for that.
No, it definitely doesn't. No.
There's nothing.
I just read you I just read you everything the Constitution says about impeachment.
Yeah, the 25th Amendment's not impeachment. It's actually a removal for basically a disability in the event of disability. But, you know, it sets forth a fairly cumbersome procedure.
So we can have a demented crazy fuck out there with the nuclear codes.
Laughing like Woody Woodpecker. Well, first of all, this is written before nuclear codes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's written at a time when, if we're going to be constitutional originalists like Fat Dead Tony, at a time when if you were nuts, everybody was going to know it before you ever ran for office, and you weren't going to run for office. There was no what's that cat's name? The dude with the boot on his head. Comedy candidate every 4 years.
Supreme.
Vermin Supreme. Yeah.
Vermin Supreme.
Yeah. There was no Vermin Supreme back then. The presidency was deemed to be a very damned serious thing to be running for. In fact, it was so serious to be running for that candidates didn't even demean themselves by campaigning. They left it entirely up to surrogates. Jefferson never got on his horse and rode to Georgia to campaign for the votes of Georgians or up to up to New Hampshire. He sat right there on his hill at Monticello and let the thing play out. And John Adams sat his ass right there in Washington and let the thing play out. It was supposed to be imbued with a little bit of fucking dignity. But like the coal miners who showed up in the White House in their coal mining duds, all that dignity done gone.
So let me ask you this, Bob. Do you think they didn't have a grasp on mental illness back then when they drafted all this?
That's
a safeguard.
Right. That's what I said last night.
Yeah.
Back then, mental illness, I mean, people like Madison and Jefferson were real, real practitioners of the art of knowing words. So they'd probably suss it out pretty quick if you said mental illness. But if you start talking to them about ids and egos and superegos, maybe the only guy in the room who picks up any of that is Ben Franklin. All right? What they knew is that if you were mad, you were not going to get anywhere near the presidency. And that nothing that happened to you in the 4 years that would drive you mad wouldn't also kill your ass. Because people died from syphilis back then. And syphilis did drive people mad.
And they had a ship of fools, too. Somebody brought that up in the chat room where they just put all the crazy people on a ship and pushed them out to sea.
I don't know the particular history of that. I know Bedlam in England, as made famous by Shakespeare, which was a hell on earth of its own sort. But the fact of the matter remains, they didn't provide a means for removing a psychotic, because psychotic was not a word then, a psychopathic, because psychopathic was not a word then, a bipolar,
dementia,
because bipolar was not a word then. Demented was a word.
But not dementia or Alzheimer's.
But to be demented, yeah, that was a word. But the thing is, it would manifest before you ever got there. Because, you know, the right. slide into dementia is rather a lengthy process.
But when I think of demented, I think of somebody pulling wings off flies. Dementia is something totally different than that.
They're the same word.
I know, Bob. But
no, Steve. I love you, but that's you imposing your meaning on a word. I mean, demented is also somebody who can't morning, noon, and night, waking and sleeping, can't stop going.
Woody Woodpecker, huh?
Yeah,
but you know. My mom had the onset of dementia, and she would never pull the wings off of flies, you know. So maybe it is me imposing. Maybe I'm too personally invested in this to make a proper, you know, observation.
But there was the idea that the people of the United States would never, ever, ever vote for a person that exhibited the symptoms of being so crazy.
Right.
Good point. And Trump has exhibited these symptoms out the gate.
Or immoral.
Well, this is not to say that it doesn't happen, because God knows all over the South there were all kinds of rumors that flew around about Abraham Lincoln, some of which may have been true. Okay, the guy probably did suffer from what we would recognize as depression. Okay,
and his wife was madder than a hatter.
She absolutely was, yes. And had he lived through the entirety of his second term, he might well have been impeached for her financial misbehavior in office, because she was ruinous. But even before Lincoln, the mudslinging between Martin Van Buren and Andrew Jackson was epic. Okay, the stuff that with which and you know, we now know that there was some truth in it. But the smearing of Thomas Jefferson over Sally Hemings, okay? Our politics has always been nasty.
Could lifespan play a component into this as well? Because dementia generally does not set in until after 50, 60 years old, and people really didn't live that long back when the Constitution was drafted. Is that possible?
The thing about lifespan is lifespan in the upper classes was often similar to what lifespan is today.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Jefferson and Adams both lived up into their 80s.
Yep. Females often died young in childbirth, but that's a whole different.
Well, they died young for a variety of reasons. There's a story out there from years ago that I still go back and find from time to time. I can't remember who published it, but it is an account of the life of Benjamin Franklin's sister, and it will break your heart. In my own family tree, there are a couple of guys back there who have two or three wives, and it's not because they're philanderers. It's because their wives died.
Right.
And sometimes it took both. I've got one set of multi-great-grandparents who in February of like 1846 died within a week of each other on the frontier here in West Virginia. It was a place with which we are largely unfamiliar. We can't imagine that because, well, it's not the world we live in. And, you know, that's one of those things where vaccines make a difference. And, God, I saw that a thing the other day where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Robert De Niro appeared jointly. De Niro didn't say a word, but they appeared to for the purpose of talking about how dangerous vaccines are. And I thought, oh, my God, really?
Because of the preservative, are they still harping on that?
Well, they're harping on that, but they're harping on other things, too. But that's neither here nor there, and not salient to the conversation. But what I want to get through here is there is nothing in Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States that provides for being able to impeach a president for being unhinged.
Crazy.
Now,
Rick,
now if would the if the
affirm
if,
that.
No, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there's no knucking futz provision there in the Constitution.
I'm, you know? I'm not second guessing you, Bob. I was just
ask a question.
Yeah.
Relevant to this. Okay, the way I'm reading this is that a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may provide by law. Is that not the way it reads?
It is the way it reads, and Congress has provided no other body by law.
Well, as such, if they provide a body by law, if Congress actually gets off their ass and does something and provides some such body. What the fuck ever the body is. A dead fucking body. I don't care what body it is. Then that would be sufficient, would it not?
If Congress says it is.
Okay. Well,
now all you've got to do is get a bill through Paul Ryan's House and a bill through Mitch McConnell's Senate saying that they're creating a blue ribbon commission to examine the mental well-being of Donald Trump and affording that commission powers of subpoena, which the president himself may not refuse. And you're in like Flynn. Or, well, no, he's out, isn't he? Never mind.
Assuming that Trump signs that bill, Bob, Trump would have to sign it.
Then Donald Trump would have to. Well, no, it says which Congress may provide.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. So that sounds jurisdictional, doesn't it, Rick?
Okay.
So if we come through the other side of this, is there any chance that something like that could transpose?
Well, and that's the point.
We need a safeguard for this.
You're asking the Congress to do something the Congress will not do. So if you're back to the 25th Amendment, you're talking about a majority of the cabinet, which is 9 people.
Does he even have 9 people on a cabinet?
The cabinet is comprised of 17 individuals.
But they're all yes men for him, so they're not going to turn on him.
And yes women.
And that's what I'm saying. Does he even have 9 people that have been approved for his fucking cabinet yet?
Oh, yeah.
He could defecate on camera on Pennsylvania Avenue, and they won't turn on him. They just
Here's another.
Shoot somebody on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah. Well, here's a wrinkle. You can't charge the President of the United States with a crime. He is immune from criminal prosecution during the 4 years in which the president holds office. And that immunity is absolute. However, let's say that Comrade Kumquat does go barking mad and runs out into the street and strangles a toddler. You can impeach him for that. Not for being mad, but for the criminal act.
For the act itself.
Yes.
Right.
Not for the motion.
I'd like to jump in here for a minute.
Go, Roger.
Yes, please do. Please do.
In September, October of 1964, there was a magazine called Fact. And the front cover reads, 1,189 psychiatrists say Goldwater is psychologically unfit to be president. And since that time, it has become quasi-illegal for physicians to diagnose without an actual number. Kiss off Terry Schiavo and all the rest of that. And this is an incredible argument that Goldwater was divorced from reality. It is unfortunate that he may soon be able to divorce all of us from reality. Is terrifying, and it is an interesting magazine. It's about a quarter inch thick, and there is a statement from every single one of the 1,189 psychiatrists who remotely diagnosed Barry Goldwater as being unfit to be president. And in rereading it, I read it back then, But in rereading it, the exact same things that back in 1964 psychiatrists were saying about Barry Goldwater, they're now saying about Trump. And to me, Barry Goldwater was not nearly as dangerous as Trump.
Oh, no, Barry Goldwater was fucking Solon compared to Trump.
Hey, Bob. Bob?
Yeah, hey, Scott.
I've got a wrinkle on this 25th Amendment thing that kind of crossed my cranium a little while ago.
All right, wrinkle away.
Okay, we're right now, as things stand, we're pretty well established that the Republican House and Senate are not going to do jack to to impeach, okay? So let's grant that. On the other hand, we do have the 25th Amendment, all right? And you've got a figure that is as batshit crazy as some of the cabinet members are, cabinet-level members are. They do dwell in the realm of reality, at least to a greater extent than Trump currently does, and some of Trump's supporters, voters. Okay, so let's establish that, I think. Now, right now we're looking at it less than a full month into a four-year term, okay? But let's fast forward a little bit to, let's say, I think it was like 1,641 days is what a four-year term works out to, what with the leap year, or 1,461 days, whichever one it is, but there's an extra day in there because of a leap year coming up. Okay, let's fast forward to like 561 days down this road. If we go at the same pace that we've been going in our little march to madness, even the cabinet members who were hand-picked by Trump have certainly got to have some capacity to see the handwriting on the wall, because 561 days in, okay, things are going to be way worse than they are now, I'm thinking. And, I mean, there are more of us than there are of them. We proved that with the popular vote, okay? So if the people who are running the agencies are hearing from people, and maybe even some in Congress, raising hell about this, you know, the continuum that we're on in terms of the sorry state of things, certainly they're going to have to either shit or get off the pot. At least one would hope. Do you follow my thinking there? I mean,
well, I do. I think I think your conclusion is flawed.
Okay, show me where.
Well, that somewhere along the way they have to shit or get off the pot.
Well, right now that doesn't look to be a likelihood because we're less than a full calendar month in, okay? But at day 561 and the time leading up to that and the events transpiring during that time frame, I mean, we are dealing with people who had responsible positions, most of them, before they became part of the cabinet. And certainly, you know, not everyone is disassociated from reality. And right now it doesn't look likely, but I'm thinking if things really get as bad as they conceivably could get, even a partisan, I mean, let's look at John Rhodes, Barry Goldwater, and Hugh Scott standing in the circular driveway of the White House in the summer of 74. They had just visited with Nixon, and they basically said, you've lost. You've got to give up because you don't have the power base even in the Congress to support your bid to stay in office. And, I mean, maybe it's optimistic. Maybe it's positive thinking. But if things
get as bad as... That's okay, Dr. Peel. We expect it from you.
Okay, but if things get as bad as they could conceivably get, that certainly is going to shake some people out of their complacency who, in the case of the cabinet, what do you say, 9 out of 17?
Yep.
Have to decide. And hopefully there would be, and see, that also takes into consideration the cabinet that we will basically have going in may not be the same cabinet 561 days from now.
Let me try another one on you.
Okay.
I've been thinking, and I mentioned it a couple of nights ago, you know, 435 members of the House. It takes half of the House voting to get a discharge petition out of committee and onto the floor. So, yeah. Again, 435, that's 200. That's 215. That's 218 votes. There are 192 Democratic members of the House of Representatives. So that means
it becomes a matter of peeling off a handful.
You got to peel off 26 Republicans. Okay.
Okay.
Now, based on what Jules brought up, that alternative language from the 25th Amendment or others such as Congress may designate, whatever the language is, that's close enough for government work. What if you could get a discharge petition for the 25th Amendment to the floor of the House and vote on it and win by one vote? Creating a nonpartisan commission to examine the fitness. Actually, I think you would have to use the word ability, or maybe conjunctive with fitness, because the 25th Amendment speaks in terms of being unable to fulfill the duties of his office. What if you could, okay, so you get that bill passed by the House. It goes over to the Senate. And it's an open question as to whether it takes 50 votes, 50% plus one, 51 votes, or does it take 60 votes to get an identical bill passed?
Yeah, because you've got to remember that all throughout this, leading up to the 561st day, that there are going to be people in the House and the Senate, regardless of party, who are going to be hearing from people, okay? See, that's why the fact that there are more of us than there are of them, that is to say, more Democrats, more right-thinking people than demented people, they are going to be hearing, as things get worse, the rabble is going to get roused, so to speak. So that the people who are in the legislature, in the House and the Senate, throughout this time period are going to be hearing from folks, and they're not going to be happy campers.
Well, what's interesting is there. I brought up that angle, Scott, because there is beginning to be talk inside the Congress of wanting what they're describing as, and it doesn't exactly fill me with confidence, a 9/11 style independent commission to look into the Trump Russia connection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you remember? Do you remember the origins of Whitewater, Scott?
Of Whitewater, yeah, it was basically a real estate deal.
It was a failed real estate deal. That just grew and morphed and grew and morphed until we were talking about oral sex.
Well, yeah, because they rode off in all directions, and I think don't we have Janet
and they kept getting their mandate expanded.
Yeah,
I've got something. I've figured out the connection between Whitewater and oral sex. It's called Aqua Booty. Aqua Buddha. Remember Rand Paul?
Yeah, Rand Paul.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know what's hilarious?
Association there.
You're not getting a cowbell for that, Rick.
I was hoping to. Oh, well, not quite good enough. All right. That's all right.
Working too hard.
I got to up my game.
What's hilarious that you brought that up is I was reading in one of the Dutch papers this morning. There was a huge write-up about Donald. This is the beginning of Donald Trump's Whitewater.
It could be.
That is almost the exact wording of how they put it.
I didn't even know you read Dutch.
I'm learning Dutch. I'm brushing up on my German. So,
getting ready to go. Are you?
No. I'm working on a project, and it's helping to know a little bit of both languages. So
another thing to consider, okay, we have the citizenry who are going to be raising hell over the next 561 days. We have some members of the House and Senate who are going to be less comfortable with having Trump as president. Then we have world leaders and world opinion. Take that for what it's worth. But certainly that at some point, there's got to be a tipping point where that begins to carry more weight than it currently does. I mean,
well, I'm just trying to be cautiously rational about all this, Scott. I don't know if him bringing about a full-on economic collapse would even do it. And you know, look, there's the Dow playing with 20,000. America will not care if he's hopping up and down Pennsylvania Avenue in a bunny suit doing an Elmer Fudd impression, saying I may be a squeaky wabbit, but at least I ain't going to Alcatraz. They won't care as long as they keep getting their cheap Chinese crap from Walmart, and as long as they don't particularly mind the price of tomatoes by the pound, you know, those nasty little green baseballs that come up out of Florida.
But here's the joker in the deck, Bob. In this day and age, it doesn't take a lot of shit hitting the fan for people to get moved out of their stupor, okay? Because if somebody like Trump can get elected on the basis of unadulterated nonsense for the better part of 18 months, inject a little reality into the equation, a little shit hitting the proverbial fan, and even, you know, you wouldn't have to be a true believer on the left side of the aisle to see, you know, it's like dwelling in a reality-based reality. And certainly there's going to be enough people across the board, one way or another, from all quarters, who can chime in on that once things start going south in a fat-ass hurry. That's what I'm saying. Right now we're looking at it, and it doesn't seem likely. I mean, even Trump says he could shoot somebody in Fifth Avenue, and it wouldn't change. Well, that's his true believers. They may not have minds to change. But then there's the rest of us. And that's, if there's any hope, I think we're going to find it on that side of the deal, the rest of us.
Well, one hopes, and we know what the response is. Jason Chaffetz's own constituents showed up in Utah and gave him 17 shades of pure hell, to which he responded, yeah, well, those are paid protesters. And then some other asshole said, where did I read this? I mean, because the quote itself was so stunning. Those are Democrats, and those aren't even the people he represents anyway. In other words, in the Republican mind, they're only voting, they're only representing the people who voted for them. They don't represent the entire district. And that ain't how it works.
I know. That's why it's incumbent upon people to disabuse them of that fantasy. So we'll see. I mean, I could be just whistling past the graveyard, but then again, one hopes that I'm not, or at least I hope I'm not.
Well, I hope so too. And look, I mean, a lot of this conversation, like I said, is us trying to find, you know, we're bobbing around in the North Atlantic and trying to find that floating door that Rose is on, okay, and hoping that she doesn't slap our hands away.
Yeah.
My door. Get away. No, me. Because you know, any piece of flotsam, just to hang on. And I recognize how desperate the situation is. Graham down in Australia just pointed out that John McCain's running around stating to foreign dignitaries, please don't give up on the U.S. yet, and we're working on it.
Oh, yeah, there's another big article about Pence being over in Europe right now.
And, I'm all for that, but I'm all for what John McCain said, but at some point in time, somebody's going to have to read him a book of without works is about be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. You know, they respond to that Bible-y stuff, because you can talk all day, but until you in Macbeth, courage to the sticking place, it don't all your miss come to naught, Mr. Finch. Wow, that's a whole bunch of references in one spot. Don't come to nothing.
Hey, we have time for a concert report.
Rick.
Lark, 1,000-person, you know, want to stand up, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of plays on a semicircular stage or, you know, and it was great. A very, very talented guy. I'd never seen him. Well, I saw him with, like, you know,
right,
like in the 70s or early 80s, I guess. Probably the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
Right. Through blinding, through blinding snow, eating mustard sandwiches uphill both ways. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was only 100 sales. No, wow. That was first two. It was the second concert of his latest tour, which is just going to be like a month or so. So. Very talented guy, I tell you. You know, I don't know what it is about those Englishmen, you know?
So did he play all the hits, or did he decide to be a jamming jazz dude?
No, he played most of the hits. I mean, he didn't play Fields of Gold. That's one, or what is it, Fields of Barley, or what is that called?
Yeah, Fields of Barley.
Yeah, he didn't play that one, but he played just about every other one, you know? So, yeah, no, so he played for about an hour and a half, and he had this like Texas kind of almost sounded like a little bit like a rockabilly band that like warmed him up, which was really good. I forget the name of it. So yeah, it was at the Hollywood Palladium. So, you know, it was a lot of fun.
The world renowned Hollywood Palladium.
Oh, there you go. See, I didn't know that. Yeah. I'd been there like back in the '80s. That was the last time I'd been there. So, but it was a lot of fun.
And I bet it was. You know, it sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just went there on the way home from work. I got like tickets at like the show started at 7, and I was like waiting to see if there would still be like tickets available, and there were somehow. Like, so I got my ticket like literally an hour before the show started, and then drove to West Hollywood. So, but
so did you elbow your way to the front of the crowd? And
no, I wasn't a dick. I was probably no more than about 150 feet from him. Pretty close.
Good acoustics.
Great acoustics. Yeah. Yeah. Good photos. Awesome. Got some good photos. So yeah. Yeah. The guy's, I think he's like 57 or something like that. He's not that old, you know,
he is not called 57.
57 and ninth is the name of the tour. He's not 57. He's older.
Born October 2nd, 1951.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that makes him 64,
66. 1951, and he's 65 years old,
yeah,
just like me.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That guy doesn't look a day older than 50.
Well, that's what being stinking rich and able to take care of yourself will do for you.
Well, there you go. Yeah, right. Right, exactly.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about, have you been keeping up with Outsiders?
I have not. I'm setting myself, Agnes and I are setting ourselves up for some serious binge watching.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I'm up to date on it, and it's getting seriously weird.
Oh, cool.
It's great, man. It's a great season.
Well, see, I got episode one, and then I had to go to DC, and then I got sick. And so that's episode two, episode three. What, we're on episode four now?
Yeah, that just came out Tuesday night.
Right, okay. Yeah. So maybe over the weekend we'll catch two, three, and four.
There's some very good plot twists that you'll enjoy, Bob. That's all I'll say.
Oh, cool.
Unexpected plot twists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you all the way up to date on it, Rick?
Indeed. Yes, sirree. Yeah.
Wasn't that ending just freaking weird on four?
Yeah, it was. It was. I'm trying to remember the ending, but I can't have you explain. It'll come back to me. I'm also watching Goliath with Billy Bob Thornton, which is really good too.
Yeah, I binge watched that in a drop dead hurry.
Yeah, yeah. He's a hell of an actor. Pretty weird guy, but hell of an actor.
Agnes and I tried to get started on The Collection. Didn't work. But I tell you what, we watched a beautiful film last night. Absolutely gorgeous. Colin Firth and Jude Law in a film called Genius, about the relationship between Maxwell Perkins, the editor for Scribner's, who also edited Faulkner and Hemingway, and Thomas Wolfe, and it had an excellent cast. Guy Pearce, who's developed a real ability to do a wide range of characters. He's Australian. Dominic West, he played Scott Fitzgerald. Dominic West played Hemingway. Laura Linney played Maxwell Perkins' wife, and Nicole Kidman played what was her name? Like Alicia Bernstein, who was Thomas Wolfe's muse. But it was absolutely gorgeous and well worth your time. I found it over on HBO Go. So,
time to get out of here, Bob.
Yeah, I got to get out of here. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, Sparky, for hosting another wonderful Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to everybody who participated. Thanks to Billable Rick and Don in Central PA and Snork and Jules. Ron never got in somehow, but thank you to Ron. Didn't hear from Charlie, but Charlie was here. Thanks to Scott in San Diego. Roger, it was awful good to hear from you. And good luck as you continue in the move. And thank you to Steve from Georgia Stan, Steve, Karen, and little Cletus being the only ones kicking in this evening. We will close the week with $180 to go in fundraising. Thanks very much for all your time participating this week. Look forward to more on Monday. And by all means, be well. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, of course, Sparky, both in the chat room and in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time in participating in this effort toward extended conversation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.